Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet program. This is your host, Adam Graham, coming to you from Boise, Idaho. And I encourage you always, feel free to email me, adam at adamsweb.us, and of course, cast your vote for us at podcastalley.com. Well, I have to say, it's either feast or famine on the Podcast Alley comments. We got quite a few this week. I'm going to share those. Really enjoy old Dragnet episodes. Thanks, Paul. Always a great show. Adam, you are the best host online. Keep up the great work. You are always welcome to come into my living room every Saturday evening. Given that your hometown's about 700 miles away from me, I think we'll just have to keep that on the podcast. But thanks. Love the podcast. I must say that I am very much missing Romero. When do we get a new legitimate partner, and who is it? Keep up the great work, and I will continue to vote for you each month. KG in New Mexico. Well, KG, the next legitimate partner is Ben Alexander, who plays the role of Frank Smith. That's the good news. The bad news is we have a little bit of a wait. Frank Smith makes his appearance on September 21st. We are currently in January. So we have got a lot of time between now between having an actual legitimate partner for Friday. And, you know, I guess that shows the loyalty that people had to the series right off, that they were willing to go through that whole period of several months. The only good news that makes this any shorter is that 2 weeks there weren't episodes because of the Republican and Democratic conventions. But hold on and enjoy Joe Friday, and I guess be reminded why he... why needed a partner to really enjoy it, to really, I think, get the full effect. I've been enjoying the old Tom Dragnet show, and it just keeps getting better. Keep up the good work, Adam. Unfortunately, I've now caught up with the current episode, so I can no longer listen to a new episode every day. I didn't think it would happen so soon. Now I have to wait along with everyone else, Natalie. Oh, well, sorry about that. Yeah, once a week and listen to an episode a day. Yeah, about 100 and some days, and you get caught up. If I remember correctly, I've been with you live since about episode 15. The quality of the show has continued to improve, and your commentary just gets better and better. By the way, I'd put myself in the very small minority that likes Jeff Regan, Investigator, better than Dragnet. Keep up the good work. Well, thanks. And I think that Regan is enjoyable, and perhaps... for different reasons other than Dragnet. It doesn't have that same sense of realism, but that's okay. We always want realism. I've watched some Columbo recently, and Columbo was practically the anti-Dragnet. I was reading an article by the authors, and they pretty much admitted that nobody would ever be allowed to go around as a police officer shabbily dressed as Columbo, so... hey, Graham, excellent program. I just listened to The Big Sorrow, and I find it kind of eerie. The episode plays out the death of Ben Romero, mimicking the actual death of the actor who portrayed him right down to the actual cause of death. That must have been a very difficult episode for Jack Webb and the rest of the cast, and further demonstrated what a consummate professional Webb was. Keeping up the great work. Good work, and thanks for fixing the sound level issue. I listened to your podcast on the way to work in the morning, and your intros used to startle me so much, I nearly ended up in the ditch from time to time. Boo! Oh, okay, sorry. Okay. Finally, we get this. I think you should keep the Fatima ads. Everyone knows how ridiculous the claims made in the commercials are, and they give an added touch of nostalgia to the podcast. I have no complaints otherwise, and I'll keep downloading Dragnet weekly. Thanks for keeping Dragnet out there. I don't know. I think it's been an artistic thing since we actually started the podcast. And my thought has always been, I tend to think the commercials detract. And I think we've discussed that. I'm not so much worried about people going out and smoking Fatimas because the brand doesn't exist anymore. Though it would be something if this show had the power to create the demand for a product that no longer exists. But no, I tend to think it flows the other way. But thanks so much for listening. Appreciate your vote. All right, well, before we get into today's show, I want to let you know about our sponsor. Go to My PC. It's the easiest way to access your PC from anywhere via the web. You can be at the library, at a cyber cafe somewhere, and you can get right into your office computer. You can use any program, file, email, network resource from anywhere. So if you've got your work computer hooked up to the network, you can go ahead and you can pull off a report off the network drive no matter where you are. And because it's secure, you can trust the reliability of the encryption that they provide. You can try Go to My PC free for 30 days, but you must visit gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for your free 30-day trial. All right, well, we're going to get into today's episode, The Big Court, here on the Old Time Dragnet program.
The story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all king-size cigarettes, brings you Dragnet on both radio and television.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. An ex-convict is accused of robbery and murder. Four witnesses identify him as the killer. The man's arraigned in municipal court and held to answer. Your job? Investigate.
Documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, March 12th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ed Jacobs. The boss is Captain Didion. My name's Friday. We were on the way over from the office, and it was 10:43 a.m. when we got to the third floor at the Hall of Justice. Municipal Court, Department 82.
You see him, Joe?
I think so, yeah. That's him up front behind the DA's table.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Leo.
Oh, hi, Friday. Jacobs. Sure.
Yeah, thank you. Who's on the stand first, you know?
Victim's wife, I think.
Oh.
People versus St. Clair.
People ready. In this case, Your Honor, we'd like to proceed with number 23548.
You may proceed. Is the defendant ready?
Defendant's ready, Your Honor. Call Agnes Holloway.
Agnes Holloway to the stand. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you are about to give in the matter now pending before this court will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth set up for God?
I do.
State your name, please.
Agnes Holloway.
Calling your attention to the fourth day of March of this year, Mrs. Holloway. Did you see the defendant in your place of business at 2301 Naylor Avenue?
Yes, sir.
What time of day did you first see him at that location?
It was around 9:30.
Will you tell us what you saw the defendant do?
For the purpose of the record, may we ask whether that was in the morning or the afternoon?
Was that in the morning or in the p.m.?
P.m.
Can you tell us what you saw the defendant do and what you heard him say at that place?
You mean before the holdup?
At 9:30. Please tell us what occurred.
Well, I came in about 9:30 to the place. He was already sitting there at the bar.
Continue.
I came in and sat down at the end of the bar. He was sitting about five stools from the door. Friend of mine, Doris Fenwick. She's here now. Doris was sitting near him. I went over and talked to Doris for a while. The man didn't say anything. He was just sitting there.
Did you see him drinking anything?
Yes, he was drinking scotch and soda.
You're the wife of George Holloway, deceased. Is that correct?
Yes.
Was he present then?
Beg your pardon?
Was your husband, George Holloway, present at that time?
Yes, he was standing in the bar.
By that, do you mean that your husband, yourself, and the defendant were the only persons present?
No, my friend, Doris Fenwick. There was a sailor there, too. I don't know who he was. He sat next to the defendant.
What occurred then?
As we were ready to close the front door, my husband noticed the light in the men's washroom.
I move that go out. What her husband noticed as a conclusion of the witness.
Didn't they go out?
Well, anyway, my husband went back in to put the light out. Doris Fenwick and I went out to the sidewalk, and so did the sailor. And the fellow did, too.
The defendant did?
Yes. And the minute I went back inside to see what my husband was doing, and the defendant followed me back in, I was about as far as the music machine. He put his arm around me, and he had a gun right here. He said, lady, this is a sticker.
Could you describe the gun you saw?
No, I just saw it look like a pistol to me. I couldn't tell you the make of it.
I move that go out, if Your Honor, please, what it looked like.
I know it was a gun.
The motion will be denied. You were inside the building when the defendant did that?
Yes. He said, keep quiet or I'll kill you.
And where was Miss Fenwick then?
She was out on the sidewalk, talking to the sailor, I think. Doris was expecting her husband to come on the streetcar.
I move that go out.
Miss Fenwick was out on the sidewalk, may stay in, and the balance may go out.
What did the defendant do after that, Mrs. Holloway?
He said, I will shoot you if you don't keep quiet. He made me walk backwards to where my husband was, and I said, Johnny, this man has a gun, and he says this is a sticker. And the man said, shut up, and he made my husband put his hands up.
Were you in fear of the gun at that time?
No, I didn't have any fear.
Did you believe the defendant would injure you with a gun?
I wasn't afraid. I thought, well, it's a hold up and we'll give him the money and that's all there is to it.
All right. Continue.
Well, when we got to the back room, my husband was trying to open the safe and he says, hurry up. I have your wife covered. I'll kill her if you don't hurry.
The defendant said that.
Yes, and my husband said, don't get nervous. You can have anything we have, but don't shoot her. Then my husband got the safe open and took out the money bag and handed it to the man, the defendant. He grabbed it, and then he shot my husband twice.
The defendant shot your husband twice?
Yes.
Do you know what the contents of the money bag were?
About $160.
At any time did you give this defendant authority or your consent to take that money?
No, sir.
The taking of the money was against your will, is that correct?
Yes.
How soon after was it that the officers arrived at the location?
It's about 7 or 8 minutes after that.
Your husband was removed to the hospital?
Yes.
Do you know when your husband died?
He died on the 7th, Friday, 6 o'clock.
You mean on the 7th of March of this year?
Yes,
Did you see your husband in the coroner's office?
Pardon?
Did you see your husband after death in the coroner's office?
No, I saw him in the hospital.
After death, did you see your husband downstairs in the coroner's office?
No, my son did.
Did you see your husband after death?
Yes, at the mortuary, Monday the 10th, at the mortuary.
And the person you viewed in death was the same Charles A. Holloway who you knew in life as your husband?
Yes.
Do you know Grace Thompson?
Yes, she works for me and my husband.
Was she present at your place of business on this evening?
Yes.
When did she leave there, do you know?
About 5 minutes to 12, midnight.
Can you fix the precise time when your husband was shot?
About 5 minutes after 12.
5 minutes after 12. How many times was the gun fired?
Twice.
How close was the gun to your husband, Charles Holloway?
Must have been about 2 feet.
Do you know Marion Shaw?
Yes.
Was she present on the premises that evening?
She was present that evening.
Do you know Mrs. Sam Garber?
Yes.
Was she present on the premises that evening?
Yes, sir. And that sailor was there, too. I didn't know him, though.
All that you've related occurred in the county of Los Angeles, state of California?
Yes, sir.
Cross the county.
May I have a drink of water, please?
Phil? Would you like to rest a while, Mrs. Holloway?
Yes, please.
We'll have a short recess before the cross-examination.
won't get to us for a while. You want to go out for a smoke?
All right. Yeah, it's fine with me.
Okay.
Okay.
What's your idea on it, Leo?
I don't know. Not to have him bound over to Superior Court.
No, I mean, you think St. Clair's the right man?
You got me. Yeah, just one good piece of physical evidence, I'd feel a lot better about it.
Go ahead. Yeah, thanks.
There you go. Light.
Yeah, take it. Thank you.
How about St. Clair's alibi? All the angles checked, huh?
All of them. Doesn't hold much water. Can't prove it's a lie. Can't prove it's the truth.
Sure hate these things. Don't know which way to go. Poor identifying witnesses, and we know how wrong they can be.
What about that sailor who was supposed to be in the bar at the time? You know, homicide didn't do any good. How about you, fella?
Well, the same, Leo. Nothing yet.
He's the only one who really got a close look at the killer besides the wife and me. Killer bumped into him when he ran out of the bar.
Yeah.
If anyone could identify the right man, the sailor could.
Well, nobody at the bar saw him before that night. Nobody's seen him since. There's not a trace of him.
Sure, our best bet. If we could find him, we might put a foundation out of this thing.
Yeah, I'll put in there. There's just one problem.
Yeah,
it's a big Navy. Where do we find him?
When 58-year-old tavern owner Charles Holloway was shot and fatally wounded in a holdup on March 4th, there were five people in the immediate vicinity. Holloway's wife, a waitress at the tavern, two women customers, and an unidentified sailor. Soon after the shooting, the scene of the crime was gone over thoroughly for all physical evidence, but besides the two fatal bullets, none was found. The preliminary investigation failed to yield any further leads. A search was started for the missing witness, the unidentified sailor. The four known witnesses were brought downtown, where they checked through volumes of pictures of ex-convicts recently released from the state penitentiaries. All of them identified the mugshot of Harold St. Clair, a recent parolee from Chino, where he'd served time for armed robbery. St. Clair was brought in immediately and questioned. He failed to establish an alibi for his whereabouts the night of the holdup and murder. He was arraigned in municipal court, and at his preliminary hearing, the first prosecution witness, the wife of the murdered man, Agnes Holloway, singled him out as the killer. By experience, the working detectives found that identifying witnesses under the strain of being present at a horrible crime can often be mistaken in their identification. In this instance, there wasn't anything else we could do. It was all we had. 11:18 a.m., the preliminary hearing resumed. The witnesses took the stand in turn, and all of them tabbed St. Clair as the murderer. Ed and I testified as the arresting officers. At 3:25 that afternoon, the prosecution rested the case for the people. St. Clair's lawyer offered no defense for the time being.
Your Honor?
Mr. Alexander?
This time the people move that case number 23529 be dismissed on the grounds that it states in substance...
23529? Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Dismissed on the grounds that it states in substance the offense covered in the present case. 23529 covers the offense of robbery and assault with intent to commit murder under the present victim in our case here, Charles Holloway. He was not dead at the time this case 23529 was filed. Subsequent to its filing, he died, and the murder count accomplished that complaint.
Let the record show that on the motion of the district attorney in the case of People versus Harold R. St. Clair, number 23529, that case is dismissed. It narrates to me that the offenses in the within deposition mentioned to wit count one, murder, a felony, and count two, robbery, a felony, have been committed, and that there is sufficient cause to believe the within named defendant, Harold R. St. Clair, guilty thereof. I order that he be held to answer to the same, and that he be committed to the custody of the sheriff of Los Angeles County without bail.
In the 17 days intervening between St. Clair's preliminary hearing and his arraignment in Superior Court, Ed and I, along with Sergeant Stoner, Beeson, and Leo Tracy, continued our investigation of the case. Physical evidence to either prove or disprove the case against St. Clair was not to be had. We concentrated on trying to find the all-important missing witness to the killing, the unidentified sailor. We got out an APB, along with special letters and bulletins for distribution to local Navy Yard commandants, as well as Navy Department officials in Washington, requesting help in locating him. It went slow. The day before St. Clair's Superior Court arraignment, we got our first lead, but not from where we expected. A two-time robbery loser, Lester Jaffe, who bore a close resemblance to St. Clair, was arrested at a check cashing agency on South Hoover trying to pass a forged check. He had several prior arrests and convictions for burglary and ADW, and the check of his package showed that he had violated his parole. A .38 caliber S&W revolver found on Jaffe was delivered to Russ Camp in ballistics for examination and comparison. The next day, Monday, March 29th, St. Clair came up for his arraignment in Superior Court. Ed and I were there.
St. Clair.
Defendant is present and ready, Your Honor.
Arraign the prisoner.
Harold R. St. Clair, is that your true name?
That's right.
Harold R. St. Clair, by information number 23549, you're charged in count one with the crime of murder. In that honor, about March 4th of this year, you did willfully, unlawfully, and feloniously, and with malice aforethought, murder one Charles A. Holloway, a human being. To this charge, how do you now plead, guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
In count two of the same information, you're charged with the crime of robbery. In that honor, about March 4th of this year, you did rob one Charles A. Holloway. To that charge, how do you now plead, guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
Joe the bailiff. For you. He's motioning to you. Phone call, I guess, must be for you.
Yeah, thanks, Ed.
Gentlemen, have you agreed on what date is convenient for trial?
No agreement as yet, Your Honor.
Harris, a phone call for you, Sergeant, right here. Okay, thank you. Friday talking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Yeah, okay, Russ. As soon as we finish here. Yeah, right. Bye.
Joe, Alex here wants to know about a trial date. Any ideas?
Well, we better get all the time you can, Alex. We're going to need it.
Anything you say. What's the matter? We got troubles?
I just had a call from Russ Camp and ballistics.
Yeah?
I figure we got a whole new case to build.
What do you mean?
Well, the man we've got, St. Clair.
Yeah?
Maybe he's taking the rap for somebody else.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action.
March 29th, Monday, 4:15 p.m. After the arraignment of Harold St. Clair in Superior Court, Ed and I checked with Russ Camp in ballistics. He said he'd run tests on the .38 S&W revolver taken from robbery forgery suspect Lester Jaffe the day before. Comparison microscopic examinations of test bullets fired from the gun taken from Jaffe and the two slugs which had been removed from the body of tavern owner Charles Holloway matched. After checking with Brereton at the CII Bureau in Sacramento, we discovered new additions to Jaffe's long criminal record. We also found out his known M.O. corresponded closely to that of the man who robbed and murdered Mr. Holloway. At a special show-up of both St. Clair and Jaffe, the close resemblance of the two became apparent to the four identifying witnesses. They frankly admitted their mistake and positively identified Jaffe as the killer. Intensive investigation during the next 3 weeks uncovered enough evidence and testimony against Jaffe by associates and informers to give us a good foundation for a murder conviction. But we were still without a lead to one of our most essential witnesses, the unidentified sailor. The first suspect, Harold St. Clair, was cleared of the charge, but detained on a warrant from the Denver Police Department. After arraignment and preliminary hearing in municipal court, the arraignment in Superior Court, Lester Jaffe went on trial for the Holloway killing on June 2nd. Dr. West, the autopsy surgeon, was first to be called by Assistant District Attorney Adolph Alexander. He stated the results of the autopsy on Mr. Holloway and testified as to the cause of death. John Maurer, the police surveyor, was next. He produced the various diagrammatic drawings of the murder scene. The third day of the trial, June 5th.
The Barbara woman's calling back on, a friend of Miss Holloway.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. Samuel Garber. Be seated.
Proceed with cross-examination.
Mrs. Garber, at the time you testified against the former suspect, Harold St. Clair, you were just as positive then, were you not, that the holdup man who killed Mr. Holloway was Harold St. Clair?
Yes, I was, but I also said he didn't have the same type eye.
You were absolutely sure about Harold St. Clair then, weren't you?
Yes, I guess I was.
And you identified St. Clair and testified a number of times during that examination that St. Clair was the man. Is that right?
I said he resembled the man.
You said he was the man, didn't you?
I said I thought he resembled the man.
You also said there was no doubt of it, didn't you? That the holdup man was Mr. St. Clair.
Well, I guess so. I don't know.
You don't know?
No, I guess I don't. I don't remember. I'm not sure.
Mrs. Garber, are you sure you remember the man you saw sitting in the bar that night?
Well, I don't know. I've got them both mixed up. I guess I'm not sure.
During the next 2 to 3 identifying witnesses were called to testify and, like Mrs. Garber, were badgered by the defense attorney unmercifully. Despite the efforts of Alec's prosecuting attorney, it was apparent the jury was being swayed heavily in favor of the defendant. Even the full day and a half Ray Pinker from the crime lab spent on the stand seemed to have little effect in counteracting the damage done by the confused testimony. To prepare the jury for Russ Camp's expert report, and for the presentation of Cyclops Bulliker gun found on Jaffe at the time of his arrest, Pinker and Assistant Attorney Alexander gave the jury a thorough briefing on the fundamentals of ballistics. They also pointed out the scientific value of ballistics and determined the innocence of a defendant. On Thursday, June 12th, Rudd took the stand as a prosecution witness and under questioning the findings of the various tests he'd run on the alleged murder.
Sometime after your people's Exhibit 13, did you fire a test bullet or several bullets from laboratory?
I did.
Did you make a comparison of any of those test bullets with Exhibits 3 and 3A, the bullets which killed Charles Holloway?
Yes, I did.
Now, in making your comparison and examination under the microscope, after you'd completed the mechanical part of your work, and after you'd completed your examination of the observable and comparable sections of the fatal bullets with a test bullet fired from people's Exhibit 13, did you come to any conclusion with respect to the Holloway fatal bullets?
Yes, I did.
And what was that conclusion?
The conclusion was that the fatal bullets, the Holloway fatal bullets, People's Exhibit number 3 and 3A, were fired through the barrel of People's Exhibit number 13.
After another hour of testifying, Russ Camp left the stand. His ballistics report on the murder gun had made an impression on the jury, but we couldn't be sure it was enough to balance the setback the prosecution received from its own witnesses. As far as we were concerned, Jaffe was the guilty man. There wasn't a doubt about it. But the case against him was apparently inconclusive as far as the jury was concerned. The defense attorney obviously had heard about the unidentified sailor who was also present at the scene of the killing. He charged outright in the court that the district attorney was purposely preventing the appearance of the unknown sailor as a witness and was concealing his identity. As he told the jury, the prosecution was afraid that the testimony of their alleged silent witness would damage its case. Meantime, our intensive search for the missing seaman was still underway. Despite half a dozen favorable prosecution witnesses, the case for the people appeared to be on the losing end going into the closing days of the trial. Tuesday, June 17th, one of the final defense witnesses was a Mrs. Albert Dolan, who presented a fair alibi for Jaffe. She claimed Jaffe was at night school at the time of the Holloway killing.
Would you say of your own knowledge that on the night of March the 4th, Mr. Jaffe was at the school until midnight?
Yes, he was.
When you left the school, did you go home alone or with somebody?
My husband and I drove home with Mr. Jaffe.
Anything else that you can remember?
Let me think.
It sure reads a convincing story, huh?
Yeah, I wonder what the connection is.
I don't know. I'm sure you got plenty of them. What do you figure, Joe? The jury, you think we got a chance?
Well, I don't know. Don't bet on it.
Ed?
Joe? Oh, hi, Bill.
Hi. Going bad?
Couldn't be a lot better.
It's getting that way. Just got a call from one we didn't know the squadron.
Oh, what about?
Sailor we've been looking for. We found him.
Before we left the courtroom, Ed and I briefed the Assistant District Attorney Alexander on the latest development. He put in a special order to the county jail for Harold St. Clair. Ed and I went across the street and met with a long-missing murder witness in the homicide squad room. The sailor identified himself as Seaman First Class Roy Maslin. He told us that about 3.5 weeks before, he'd happened to see a copy of the bulletin we'd gotten out on him. He checked with his commanding officer and was returned to the mainland from his post on Midway Island. 3:22 p.m., we returned to the courtroom along with Seaman First Class Roy Maslin and conferred with Assistant District Attorney Alexander. The first murder suspect, Harold St. Clair, had already been brought downstairs to the courtroom from the county jail. He was placed at the opposite end of the counsel table from the defendant, Lester Jaffe.
May we approach the bench, Your Honor?
Come forward.
Your Honor, we've just now located a witness in this case. He's in the armed services and must report back for duty tonight. May we have permission to call this witness out of turn?
Permission granted.
Oh. All right, sir.
Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you are about to give in the matter now pending before this court will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
State your name, please.
Seaman First Class Roy Mazin, United States Navy.
Be seated.
Are you acquainted with the Tavern Cafe at 2301 Naylor Avenue?
Yes, I am.
Were you there on the evening of March 4th of this year?
Yes, I was there a few minutes before midnight.
Will you tell the court in your own words what happened on the premises that night?
Well, it was just a couple of minutes before midnight. People around the place said they were closing up, so I had a nightcap. Shot dice for the drinks with this guy next to me. I won.
Who was this man?
I didn't know who he was.
After you had your drinks, did you leave the bar?
Yes, I did. The other guy stayed there. I went out to the sidewalk and stood there talking with one of the gals I saw in the bar, and then I heard a couple of shots fired. Somebody inside the joint screamed and hollered or something. I was just going to the door to get inside, and this man came rushing out. He hit me square on and went down. I remember seeing him run down the street, the same guy I was thinking of.
Would you recognize this man if you saw him again?
Yes, sir, I would.
Is that man in this courtroom now?
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, please direct the defendant to stand alongside of Mr. St. Clair so that this witness may properly identify the man involved.
Mr. Jaffe, will you stand up, please? Stand to the right of Mr. St. Clair.
Will you step down from the stand, please, Mr. Maslin, and place your hand on the shoulder of the man who was in the bar with you the night of March 4th?
Yes, sir. This is the man, Jaffe.
Fast work, sir.
Really burned up. Guess he'd like to kill me, huh?
No, you're not the only one, son.
What?
Wait till they read him the verdict.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On June 21st, the jury retired to deliberate the case. In a moment, the results of that deliberation. Lester Carl Jaffe was found guilty of murder in the first degree. He was executed in the lethal gas chamber at the state penitentiary, San Quentin, California.
Exchange clubs sponsor Crime Prevention Week to remind you that the fight against crime is your fight. The year round.
You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Heard tonight were Barney Phillips, Vic Perrin, and Virginia Gregg. Script by Jim Moser. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all king-size cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles. Next, it's David Harding and Counter Spy on NBC.
Welcome back. I sincerely hope I didn't scare that guy in the last segment with the whoa. But I do have to say one thing I never got about this. Maybe it's officially the name of the gas chamber, but they say lethal gas chamber. I was not aware there was any other kind that you would sentence somebody to. But beyond that, this show was honestly one of my, probably of all the Dragnet episodes we've listened to, probably one of my least favorites. And I think you see this, you know, it focused a lot on the boring parts of being in court. And really, this was, again, one of those episodes that really needed Ben Romero to say, Joe, I'm getting tired of all this. And go into some complaint about the brother-in-law or something like that. Because it was a challenge. And I think honestly, the courtroom, is something that Jack Webb, when you watch some of his other productions, I think he had trouble making that connection. I think it was a lot easier to make the connections with firemen, policemen, emergency response, to be able to make that drama. When it comes to courtroom, it's a lot harder. In season 6 of Adam 12, they actually had Reed and Malloy only show up for a cameo. And the whole rest of the episode was a pilot, actually, for a new series about a lawyer starring Frank Sinatra Jr. Show did not take off, and I think the challenge of really dramatizing court, I think it really was something that Webb didn't do as well as he did other areas. But, all right, well, we'll be back next week. Stay with us, hang tough, and remember, in a few months, we'll have the real, genuine Frank Smith on the show, and it's going to be a lot of fun. For now, though, got any comments, feel free to email me, adam@adamsweb.us. Check out the show notes site, dragnetradio.blogspot.com. And always, please cast your vote for us at Podcast Alley. For now, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.